come to order. Roll call.
Roll call for Monday, January 19th. We're having a little difficulty with the computer, so one moment, please.
Okay.
Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Excused.
Excused. Case.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper. DeCaria.
Excused.
Excused. Dockstader. Esquibel. Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Honeycutt.
Here.
Jennings.
Excused.
Excused. Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Massey.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Perkins.
Excused.
Excused. Peterson. Ross.
Excused.
Excused. Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Sessions.
Excused.
Excused. Townsend.
Here.
Basie.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Hines.
Here.
24 present, 6 excused.
Prayer by the Reverend Gilbert.
President Hines, Wyoming Senators, and Senate staff, thank you for the opportunity of being your chaplain for the week and guiding us in prayer. May we pray. Creator and user of human life, we pause this morning to give thanks for Martin Luther King Jr. And in remembrance of him, we also bring to mind the many who have given to us a vision for life, who have enabled us to see the value of life, and whose very being has shown us variety within life. We are not all of one mind, but we are of one heart. And in that heart there throbs the desire to be insightful persons of vision, worthy persons of value, and wise persons who can weave variety into unity. Grant us wisdom for this day, strength for this day's tasks, patience with people, so that at the strike of midnight, we may know that today we have been useful servants of yours, Almighty God. Amen.
Join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading correction and approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of January the 16th, 2009, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. There is no doctor scheduled today or no nurse scheduled. I think the Cheyenne family practice will come if there's a need for them. Thought for the day, Patience is the ability to keep your motor idling when you feel like stripping the gears. Okay. Unfinished business will be rules. We are that order of business, adoption of rules. Majority Floor Leader Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate rules and joint rules previously adopted as the temporary rules of the Senate of the 60th Legislature be adopted as the permanent rules for the Senate for the 60th Legislature.
You've heard the motion. Before voting on the motion to adopt temporary rules or permanent rules, the Senate will first consider any proposed amendments to the temporary rules. Amendments to temporary rules require a majority vote for adoption. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. In regard to the amendments, in regard to the first joint amendment to the Joint Rule 1, I think that, Mr. President, if I could defer, I was going to defer to Senator Ross, but I think in lieu of that, I will defer to Senator Massey.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. With regard to Joint Rule 1 that folks have in front of them, this was first proposed to the Management Council, which reviewed it and approved it, and then provided to the Joint Rules Committee of both the House and the Senate, and is now coming to you. There are two joint rules that we'll be voting on, and the first one I'll be talking about, Mr. President, is Joint Rule Number 1. So I move adoption of Joint Rule Number 1, and does that need to be read in?
Yes. Reading clerk will read in that rule.
Joint Rule 1, delete Senate Rule 8-3 and further amend as follows.
Okay. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Joint Rule 1 deals with the formatting of the amendments that come to us. Right now, a fairly complicated amendment could come out, and we've all seen them before, where it'll make changes to several lines of either statute or a proposal within a bill. And it could go something along the lines of delete these two words after this comma, insert these three words after this particular word. And what we wind up doing is going into the bill and inserting words or cutting and pasting that amendment into a paragraph in order to try to make sense of it. What this amendment will do is permit our LSO attorneys, when they decide to draft that kind of an amendment, to put it in a different format that will allow us and make it easier for us to read. And in fact, they'll do the cutting and the pasting, and they'll provide us with the amendment in amendment form that we usually try to do by the cutting and the pasting. To make this a little bit clearer, Mr. President, and it's a little bit easier when you actually see it, after this two-page amendment in your packet are two examples of what this would look like. And the best one would be to take a look at the second example. Second example of the packet that's in front of you. It's a theoretical bill, Senate file number 84, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. The top part of it is what we now get. And that's the amendment that the form would show up in. After A, insert the following wording, so on and so forth. Everyone can read it, what's in front of them there. What this amendment would do, if we adopt it as part of the joint rules, would be alternative number 2. And so that's what we'll be able to look at and be asked to vote upon. Okay? So, again, it's essentially the LSO staff using their discretion, rather than putting it in the form that we see up at the top, we'll be giving them the ability to put it in the form that you see under alternative number 2 for us to be able to vote on. The purpose of this is to make these amendments more readily understandable. So what the amendment that you have, that the folks have in front of them, is rather than going in to the present joint rules and do deletions, additions, and that type of thing, this amendment just simply deletes Senate Rule Number 8-3 and creates Joint Rule 21-1 to be read as follows. Much of what you see in 21-1 A and B are already contained in rules, but it does make some additions in order to provide for this new formatting. I hope that I got that right, Mr. President. It's not as complicated as it sounds, but it does take a little bit of complication in order to try to explain it. And so not only me, but I think there'll be other folks out there be glad to answer any questions that folks have about what we're being asked to vote on.
Further discussion, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President. I think that works really well on amendments, and I'm just wondering about on the format of bills when you look at subparagraph 3 when it says newly created statute. It says when a new statute is being created in a bill, new language will not be underlined. Then in the bill, what I'm supposed to assume is that I have to go back to the beginning title and look to see where this new section is created to determine whether that is different from the rest of the language that would be in the bill and the language that I would normally see in it, because just in the reading of the bill, it'd be exactly the same. So to make that determination, you'd have to go back to the beginning. And, you know, I think I've seen, the reason I bring this up, Mr. President, is that I think I've seen some Word programs where the new language is always colored or red, or it's determined or it's distinguished some other way right in the bill. And I think we're going a long way in what we've done so far, and I think it'll really help in amendments. But I'm just thinking that maybe in the next time we look at this, that we try to make a distinction between the new language that is created in a statute, without having to go back to the front of the bill to find out whether that was a newly created section. So that might be the next step or the next thing that we might look as far as an improvement in our statute formatting.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. In that regard, with what the good senator said from Goshen County, remember, though, that that's the way we do it now. Newly created language is not underlined or anything else, and that's the purpose of that. And so we haven't really changed anything with regard to how we do business now. Now, whether or not we wish to come back with a different amendment at subsequent time, that would be a whole other topic at a different time. But with regards to the amendments in context, while it may be that we'll be doing things just somewhat different, you need to remember that the example that you received on the back page, amendment in context, those lines will appear numbered, so you'll still be able to determine if you wish to divide an amendment. You will still be able to do that, but you'll do it by reference to the lines, which you don't see in the example here. So those will be numbered, and you'll still be able to do it. You'll see it as it looks in context, but you'll still be able to divide it. Which is different. I mean, if you looked at alternate one, that's the old way. Page 2, line 8, and you wanted that to be the first part of your division. You just kind of strike that, we squared that off and take that first. You can still do that in example number 2, or alternative number 2, but you'll have to go down and then look at line, it would be, depending on how it formats out, it could be line 3 and line 4 of that, which will be numbered. You can delete those sections still or divide that out that way. So, but the good thing is that we'll be able to see it in context, and more importantly, the public will be able to see it in context.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess my question is, though, If there had been a new language inserted into this paragraph, alternative two, how would we have distinguished from what the amendment was doing, from what the new language that was originally in the bill, how would you distinguish between those two?
Senator Massey.
That's the discretion that we're giving to the Legislative Service Office staff. I mean, if it comes down to where using this new format blends so many different things together that it's not readily distinguishable, then they'll go back to what we're using right now. So what this is another option for the LSO staff and for us to be able to understand the amendments more quickly and more readily. It's not saying we will absolutely move away from what we're doing now. It's just simply another option.
Thank you, Mr. President. In reading the language of the rule change, I think it's pretty clear. I just have a question on the example. It looks like there's a mistake, and I want to be sure that I'm reading the mistake right. If you look at the amendment in context, it should the rules pass, each is underlined, E under each. And that probably shouldn't be. I just want to be sure that I'm understanding the example relative to the rule changes.
Senator Scott.
Well, the reason for that is that it used to be capitalized, now it's a small letter, because it used to be at the front of the sentence. So that it's done properly in the example. Mr. President, I think it's worth trying. I think there's two potential problems. One is the one that was just mentioned, where you can't distinguish between what this amendment's doing and what the bill is already doing. And that would cause going back to the old format, I guess. The other is whether it'll be easier to divide an amendment on the old system or the new system. And I'm not sure of that. I don't think we'll know that till we try it. So I think it's worth trying. My question is, did the Rules Committee consider, and the Management Council consider, using the old system and then putting the revised paragraph in so that you can see it and don't have to plug it in? Just as putting it in the amendment as an example, but really relying on the old system as the formal amendment.
Senator Rouse.
Thank you, Mr. President. Management Council and the Rules did consider that question, and we considered the fact that what we're doing at that point in time is duplicating the work for LSO, and so we've doubled their workload. And so we chose not to do that. I think we'll have a little growing pains with this to a certain extent, because we all are used to alternative number one. But ultimately, I think once we see it and when it comes out in the form with numbered lines, you'll still be able to accomplish the very same thing.
Further discussion? Any further discussion? The question is before you is amendment number one to the Senate joint rules. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I would now at this time move that we address changes to, I would move that Senate Rule number one be adopted as an amendment to the rules, and then I would then call upon Senator Jennings for an explanation of this change.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. Currently in our rules, when a bill is assigned by the President to go to committee, is heard in committee, and it comes back out of committee with a due pass or no recommendation and whatnot. If it has money in it, then it's re-referred back to appropriations. It's kind of confusing sometimes that when it comes back out of appropriations, if it doesn't carry the same recommendation that the original committee gave it, which is what it says in the rules, that if they put a do not pass or a no recommendation on there, that is secondary, and the original committee recommendation is supposed to stand. So to eliminate that possibility of misunderstanding, what we've done here is deleted number three, and then added, and shall be reported to the presiding officer for placement on general file. It doesn't do anything to placement on general file. It doesn't do anything to majority floor leader's ability to put it on general file or not. It just basically carries through the, or verifies that we're going to carry through the recommendation of the first assigned committee as it states in rules now. It doesn't take appropriations ability away to delete funds or to change the amount of money. They can still go in there, take it all out, put more in, whatever they want to do. It just kind of clears up some confusion there that it's supposed to be the original assigned committee's recommendation on the bill when it comes out of appropriations.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to speak against the adoption of this rule. There is nothing confusing about the present rules that we have. What has happened over time is, of course, remember first and foremost, we're required to adopt a balanced budget. In order to have a balanced budget, it means that the Appropriations Committee has to keep track not only of the budget and its amendments as it goes through, but also bills with appropriations. The present process now is that when a bill is re-referred to the Appropriations Committee, the rule provides that it shall be considered, and the committee may recommend one of three options. The third option is the one that's being proposed to be eliminated, is that the Joint Appropriations Committee can recommend a do not pass. Now, the existing language provides that if the Joint Appropriations Committee recommends a do not pass, and it's reported back, and then it's reported back out to the floor, that it may have the original do pass recommendation governs on general file. But this is a statement by the Joint Appropriations Committee to you all that we don't recommend that you fund it. Now, you'll recall, and you, for those of you who've been around, know that what is happening is that we have many bills coming through here that do nothing other than provide appropriations. It's a bill that says we hereby appropriate this amount to the Department of Health for mental health, substance abuse. We appropriate this amount. It serves no other purpose other than to appropriate. First, those probably provide or belong in the budget. But in those instances where the bill does nothing but appropriate money, it makes no sense to waste our time to go through and say, well, we recommend 0000, which nullifies the entire impact of the bill. By providing a do-not-pass recommendation, then it's a heads-up to the majority floor leader who may choose to put it at the bottom of the list, just like he can any other one. You'll recall that in the last session, the Appropriations Committee reported out probably three or four bills. In some instances, the majority floor leader did not pull the bill up at his discretion. In others, they came out to the floor, and we explained to you why we recommended against it. And in some instances, you agreed with us. In some instances, you did not agree with us. Nothing confusing about that whatsoever. The present rules are established for a purpose. Therefore, you to understand exactly what it is that we're recommending it. And I submit to you, it's more confusing for us to go and zero bills out, declaring them essentially ineffective, and you're trying to figure out, well, what did the Appropriations Committee recommend, and why didn't they just say, do not pass it? We're here to provide guidance to you, to help you determine what bills ought to go forward with funding. In this instance, the existing language has worked for years, and I would urge that you would defeat this vote this down.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, first I'll ask for the yeas and nays on this. Mr. President, I too rise to urge us to not adopt this particular rule. I think the existing rules are quite clear. And one other thing I wanted to mention, it does give the Appropriations Committee, the existing rules give the Appropriations Committee the ability to say, if you're proposing an amendment, say if you're going to do it, this is how you ought to do it. The funds ought to come out of here, switch the funds around, put in a lesser amount or a greater amount. Say this is, so we get the Appropriations Committee's clear recommendation on how to do it if we're going to, and then tell us they think we're better off not to do it at all. And I think the current system has been working perfectly clearly. I don't think it's confusing because the rule is very clear that the recommendation from the original standing committee is the one that governs when it comes to the ability to for the majority floor leader to bring the bill up. So I think we'd be best sticking with the rules we've got and giving the Appropriations Committee the ability to make a straightforward recommendation to us, which we can treat like we treat all their recommendations.
The reading clerk needs to read this amendment in.
Senate Rule 1, amend Senate Rule 9-4 to read.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to divide this proposed amendment. And the first division would be everything except the stricken out portion of Section 3. And then the Section 3 part of the amendment would be the second division.
What? Okay. I have to ask the clerk to give me a copy. Do you have a copy available?
Why not?
Okay, excuse me. Would you explain your division, Senator Massey? Again. Again.
This language is inconsistent with this. What's happening here is you got 11-2.
Mm-hmm.
You pull that out. If you leave this in, then you got this. It doesn't really make sense.
Okay.
This was put in because this was taken out.
Mr. President, the division would be, the first part of the division would be 9-4A. And then the second division would be subsection B.
Discussion. Discussion on the amendment on the first portion, 9-4A. Senator Nicholas.
Clear. I would urge that you vote no with respect to this. This is the provision that, in essence, takes away from the JAC, but the Senate Appropriations Committee, the ability to recommend do not pass. That's a valuable and needed tool in some instances, so I would urge that for the first division you vote no.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I also urge you vote no, and I want to make clear that I do request a roll call on this division.
Okay. Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe? Cooper?
No.
DeCaria? Aye. Dockstader?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer? Nicholas?
No.
Perkins? Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Vasey?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 7 ayes, 23 noes.
By your vote, the first division have failed. The second division is B. Is there discussion on division B? Second division, paragraph B. Senator Massey.
President, since we really haven't talked about this part of the bill, I thought I'd stand up and convey the reason why the Rules Committee is recommending this. Much to our surprise, we don't have any rules right now which requires the second committee, in this case the Appropriations Committee, to make sure that the bill is heard and referred back out to the floor. We thought we had it in there, and that's certainly the practice and the expectation. But when we realized it wasn't in the rules, we thought it would be good to clarify practice and ensure that it is in the rules. Now, it doesn't require the bill, of course, to come up on Committee of the Whole, and so it does not take away or compromise the authority of the majority floor leader to schedule the bills. It's just like any other bill that's referred to committee. It just simply assures that it's going to be referred back out to the presiding officer.
Senator Scott.
I do not request a roll call on this division.
Thank you. Discussion? Further discussion? All, Senator Nicholas? Further discussion? Question been called for. All in favor of this division, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
That division have passed. I believe we have one more joint rule, Senator Anderson, that we did not.
Thank you, Mr. President. And at this time, Mr. President, I would move joint rule amendment, joint JR0002, and ask that be read in.
Joint resolution 2, amend joint rule 16-1 little a dash little 2 as follows.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Recommend your approval of this amendment to the Joint Rule 16-1-A. You okay over there? All this amendment does is to codify in our joint rule, which is the existing language of our Senate Rule 7-3C and House Rule 4-3C. It's just making sure that that's brought in. Those are currently existing rules within our own individual bodies, and it just incorporates them into the joint rule and urge your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the rule. Further discussion. All those in favor of the proposed amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment motion carried. Senate Majority Floor Leader Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I apologize for having alternated the sequence on these amendments, but I would now move Senate Rule 002 and ask the reading clerk read that in and would defer to Senator Massey for an explanation of this amendment.
Senate Rule 2, amend Senate Rule 7-1 to read.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I moved adoption of Senate Rule number 2. Let's see, which one are we on? Okay, this one pertains. This one, Mr. President, deals with once again putting into practice what we actually do right now. If there is an opening on a committee, especially with regard to a standing committee, then there is, let's see. Okay. In dealing with the creation of the standing committees, it indicates presently in rules that they shall be appointed by the President of the Senate with the advice and consent of the Rules and Procedures Committee. And that isn't really done right now. Instead, it's often after conferring with the majority and minority leaders with regard to the makeup of the standing committee. And so the LSO staff brought this to the Senate Rules Committee for consideration, indicating that what we do should follow what we have in the rules. And that's the reason why this is being now brought forward to the Senate floor, is to conform our rules to the present practice in which the Senate President confers with the majority and minority floor leaders in determining Senate standing committees.
Discussion on the proposed amendment? Question been called for. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Are there any further amendments? Any further amendments? There being no further amendment, the question is, shall the temporary Senate rules and joint rules as amended be adopted as the permanent rules of the Senate of the 60th Legislature? A majority of the vote is required for adoption of this motion. Would the Senate clerk please call roll?
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dicaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Geis, aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Honeycutt,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Vasey,
aye.
Von Flatern, President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, the temporary Senate rules and joint rules have been adopted as amended to be the permanent rules of the Senate of the 60th Legislature. Members of the Senate, today we celebrate Wyoming Equality Day, a holiday to commemorate the life and legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. This is a day of celebration, and joining us to pay tribute to Dr. King is our very own Elizabeth Byrd. Liz served in both the House of Wyoming Legislature. She served in the House of Representatives from 1981 to 1989. And served in the Senate from 1989 to 1992. Senator Byrd was the driving force behind passage of today's holiday here in Wyoming. She introduced legislation to make the birthday of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. a holiday. Her bill was signed into law in 1990, declaring the third Monday in January a Wyoming holiday to celebrate civil rights and equality for all. Please join me in welcoming former Senator Harriet Lyd Byrd. Will you see, please say a few words to us?
Oh, yes. Today I've come to talk to you about the Prince of Peace. Oh, Mr. President and members of the Senate, I look up there and I see there are a lot of you that I used to serve with over there in the House. And it's such an honor and a pleasure to be here. And Mr. President and members of the Senate, it is truly another wonderful day today. Today we celebrate and honor a man who spent his whole life working for unity, for justice and peace. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he had words of peace that have been heard around the world. His struggles were for the rights of all mankind. Dr. King had a dream, and his vision was to help the poor and the hungry, the deprived and the sick, the elderly and the persecuted, the handicapped, the homeless, and the unemployed. He strived for equal rights for everyone. Dr. King was against violence and terror. He hated and hate and dishonesty. He did not like shady deals and shady policies and unfair rules and unfair laws and unjust practices in the workplace. He demanded equal opportunity and honesty for all Americans. He wanted to give all Americans the reasons to believe and to hope and to know that the future would be better than the past. Today, we recall his devotion and dedication to all mankind and to the world. He gave the world a challenge and a message for peace. Today, there is hope. And tomorrow, we will get President-elect Obama. And he will be a new president, and we will have change. The dream of Martin Luther King is well, and it is alive. We will build a stronger and better America. We will find the answer to the foreclosures and the loss of homes and the loss of jobs. We will strive and we will work to slow down the financial bleeding of our economy. We will try to provide better health care in this nation. We want to put highways and railroads and airlines and water transportation back on its feet again. We want to invest in wind and solar energy and work on flood control and water storage. We want to use American coal, American oil, and American gas. And most of all, make and buy American products and take care of the global warming that we have. We can do this, and we can keep the dream alive. Oh, yes, we can. It is up to each one of us as Americans and American citizens to keep this nation strong. We must keep the American dream alive, and we shall overcome. Yes, yes, we can. And I thank you. so very much for letting me be here. But then most of all, too, we'd like to thank the veterans and the military and those people of this great nation for protecting our freedoms. The veterans and the heroes who have given their very best all around the world to live the American dream and to let peace and freedom ring. Again, I would like to say thank you for letting me speak to you. I would like to say happy birthday to Dr. Martin Luther King and to all of you. Thank you for being here for America, and God bless America.
Senator Byrd, thank you so much for joining us today to provide your insight about Dr. King's legacy. Liz is a member of Cheyenne Love and Charity Club, which annually sponsors a march up Capitol Avenue on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The march will begin at noon today at the Depot Plaza. There will be a celebration at the conclusion of the march on the steps of the Capitol at approximately 12:30 p.m. Please plan to join the festivity during the noon recess if your schedule permits. Thank you again. Introduction and reading and reference of bills. Senate File 111, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 111, sponsored by Senator Schiffer. First Responder Retirement Contributions, an act relating to employee retirement.
Senate File 111, it referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Senate File 112, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 112, sponsored by Senator Scott. Archaic Price Regulation Repeal, an act relating to trade and commerce.
Senate File 112 have been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 120, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 120, sponsored by Senator Peterson. Critical Access Hospitals Challenge Program, an act relating to the Wyoming Critical Access or Rural Hospital Endowment Challenge Program.
Senate File 120 have been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 114, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 114, sponsored by Senator Martin. Animal Control, an act relating to animal control.
Senate File 114 have been referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 119, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 119, sponsored by Senator Peterson. Public Transportation Funding, an act relating to the Wyoming Department of Transportation.
Senate File 119 have been referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate File 101, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 101, sponsored by Senator Hastert. Trona Utility Shot Fire Certification, an act relating to mining operations.
Senate File 101 have been referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 66, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 66, sponsored by Senator Esquivel. Medicaid Foot Care, an act relating to Medicaid.
Senate File 66 have been referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Bills on second reading. Senate File 9, second reading of the bill.
State Engineer Permit Application.
Okay, discussion. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. If we could have the amendment read in.
Reading clerk.
Senate File 9, second reading amendment number 1, delete the Scott et al. Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 9. This does two things. With respect to the Scott Amendment, it does not delete all of the amendment. It actually maintains the position adopted by the Senate last week, where we keep the language and that is allows the state engineer to adopt reasonable rules and regulations and identifies that as subparagraph C. What it does do is the in the previous amendment there would have been two provisions dealing with rulemaking. This just simply limits it to one section, which is C, which is adopted. So I think in that sense it's a cleanup. The second part it addresses is the issue of rules and regulations that have already been adopted. Among other things, that the old language, if you read it strictly, would have provided that all rules and regulations that have been filed with the Secretary of State are hereby adopted or hereby ratified. We talked about the ratification issue and what does that mean last week, secondly, if you ratify as valid all rules and regulations which are filed with the Secretary of State, that would include rules and regulations which may have been filed for promulgation but were not adopted. It would talk about rules that repealed or modified. So what we're doing is clarifying that the rules and regulations implementing the section that were duly adopted, that were valid at the time of effective July 1, 2008, and have not been repealed or modified, that they are deemed to have been lawfully adopted. Obviously, then that still allows someone to challenge the rules if it exceeds the authority of the state engineer as any other rule. So I think it clarifies what we're trying to do, makes clear that we're simply saying that rules that were previously adopted that are still in effect remain valid. I urge your support of the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Not all in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate File 9, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 22, second reading of the bill, of the Senate file.
Wyoming Economic Development Act.
Senate File 22, having been read two separate times, there is an amendment. Would you read the amendment in, please?
Senate File 22, second reading amendment number 1, page 3, line 2.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move adoption of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 22. This gets at the provision, Mr. President, with regard to the Wyoming Main Street Loan Participation Program, which is currently in the Main Street Program statutes and we're moving it into other parts of the statutes, which is fine. As we heard during the discussion and description of this bill, it's meant to not only kind of streamline the revolving loan program, but also to put this in part of the statutes which deal with these other types of loans. What this amendment does is go to the end of the first sentence describing this participation loan program and just simply makes it clear that the loans that are provided under the Main Street program are for building improvements that maintain the structure's historical character. So it continues with the committee's decision to expand these grants to more than just simply the exterior of the building. It allows other parts of the building to be included in the loans, too, because the valid point was made that sometimes in order to improve the exterior of the building, you have to do some things in the interior. It just simply brings forward the historical nature of these Main Street program grants.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't have a problem with the amendment. However, it should be pointed out, we were told by committee that originally it did not, the Main Street program did not just refer to historical parts of buildings. This is an addition to that. I guess I'm not quite sure whether or not this is going to mean that you must rebuild in the character that you had before. The present Main Street program, although it has been very successfully used for that throughout, I have been told that there isn't any place in the original Main Street that refers only to historical character, if you would. So I guess what I would say, vote it up, vote it down. It is a little bit narrowing to historical character, which isn't presently, I've been told, in the legislation. But I see that it does no great harm, maybe does some good, but it was not a change when we included that in because the people in charge of the Main Street program say it was not part of the original legislation.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Rising and reluctantly seeking in opposition, or actually seeking your opposition and voicing my opposition to the proposed amendment. The reason for this is Wyoming Main Street Program. The Main Street Program in general is a broad area focusing on redeveloping existing areas, particularly in downtowns. You'll find we don't have a Main Street in our part of the state, but you do in the south. There's an active Main Street here in the capital. There's an active Main Street Program in the southeastern portion of the southwestern portion of the state. And other places, Main Street is generally involved in redeveloping those areas. It's not limited strictly to historical nature or maintaining, although oftentimes that's a significant part of it because that creates a nice niche for downtowns to retain their architectural and historical prevalence. But ultimately, it's more than that. It's making those things, redeveloping those businesses. And so they've been using those not only to maintain historical infrastructure and the historical character of the buildings, but also upgrade and update those to where they can have meet current codes, that they can have, they can be changed into apartments, that they can be changed into current or modern retail spaces or commercial spaces. And so by doing this, while it's made in good faith and intentionally, I think it's just with this misunderstanding of what the breadth and the scope of the Main Street program is. I think we would do harm with this in tying the hands of Main Street programs far beyond what they've had their hands and what these funds and loans have been able to do in the past. So that I would encourage your defeat of this particular amendment.
Discussion. Senator Massey, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do understand this program, and in fact, many years ago in my earlier days, I was the president of the charter committee that set up a state chapter of the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And indeed, the Main Street program is part of a national program for National Trust for Historic Preservation. And in fact, the statute 912-1104, which we passed just a couple of years ago in this chamber after a great deal of debate, says the council shall establish and administer a Wyoming Main Street program to coordinate state and local participation in programs offered by the National Main Street Center, created by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. So there's some criteria involved in those grants that come to the state in order to provide to businesses in the state of Wyoming. Now, the amendment that is being proposed to you talks about the historical, talks about the historical character of the building, not the historic. And there's a big difference in the words. It's the National Trust for Historic Preservation. That means something that's significant to history. Historical just simply means that it's old. So what this does is ensure that the loans that are provided as part of this program that was intentionally aimed at the historic character of the downtown areas just be applied for historical purposes, which is very broad and provides a great deal of flexibility. Mr. President, if we don't put this amendment on, if folks were to take a look at what the present statute says, it says that these loans means a provision of financing by the council to which council participates with a lender that has made a loan to a business for building improvements. I mean, that could mean a parking lot. It could just simply mean a 1980s building that's being renovated. Or it could even, in turn, have something that completely demolishes the historical character of a downtown and put something new in. And in fact, it doesn't even pertain necessarily to the Main Street or the downtown program. So I think that this amendment, in a very flexible way, ties it back to the entire intent of this program and why we passed it to start with.
The question is, shall this amendment pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment passed. Senate File 22, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no opposition, it is so ordered. Senate File 46, second reading of the bill.
School District Facility Lease Fees Limitations.
Senate File 46, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 57, second reading of the Senate file.
Rental vehicles.
Rental vehicles, there is an amendment. The reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 57, second reading amendment number 1, page 12, line 13.
Senator Von Pleiderin.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor before I move the amendment?
You may.
Explain. Thank you. We had some questions come up on first reading of this bill, and I just wanted to answer that. For President Hines, there is that 4% surcharge fee I was incorrect. They do split it with the counties. So 2% stays in the county and 2% will go to DOT. And Senator Schiffer had asked about other enforcement officers. What was intended in that bill was that there'd be enforcement officers that would be enforcement officers to look after the dealers, the car rental agencies. It wasn't intended as anybody doing additional enforcement on the road of rental cars. Let's see, what are the questions? And the good senator from Teton County, excuse my use of names here, you had a question about, and your comment was about putting extra burden and cost upon the rental agencies who are really our greatest revenue generator at the airports. And that's very true, they are. And my airport has the same benefit of having them there. This actually puts no additional revenue burden on the rental agencies. In fact, there is some leeway in there that actually gives them a little more time for reporting. And, in fact, according to DOT, one of these issues was brought by the Jackson area rental agencies because they have unfair competition by a certain other agency that was not on airport, not appropriately doing the 4% surcharge. There is going to be probably a third reading amendment by that will cover a lot of the questions that Senator from Casper had that I couldn't write down quick enough as he was throwing them at me. But in reality, I think it's not a substantial change to the bill, and those questions that he had will be answered through that amendment. And now, Mr. President, I'd like to move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 57 and ask that we dispense with further reading. And fellow senators, this one goes to a problem I had with the bill myself. It's page 12, line 13, which talks about, as the law exists today, and as this bill reiterates, that you could rent in another state and bring the vehicle in here, and nobody's paid the 4% surcharge, and it has out-of-state license plates, and according to our regulations, you're in violation. You get a ticket right there. If a police officer pulled you over, looked at your rental contract, would realize it had Utah plates or Montana, no 4% paid, you had not bought a temporary worker's permit, which is the only way you can get out of working in the state and not re-registering your vehicle, he'd write you a ticket. Well, that didn't make sense to me. You call a technician for a piece of equipment you have in your factory or in your gas treatment plant out in the oil field, and he has to fly in from who knows where in the world, lands in Salt Lake, might have been the only place he'd get a ticket into, or Billings or Rapid City, gets a rental car, heads out to the field, 2, 3, 4 days, he's doing this repair on this special piece of equipment. The whole time he's in violation. So it seemed to me that we should have some kind of grace period there where a person wouldn't be in violation. And so that's what the amendment does. Page 12, line 13, delete by the person who rented. On the next page, continue by deleting the vehicle. And on page 12, line 15, after Wyoming, insert for a continuous period of more than 14 days. So they can operate for a couple weeks, do whatever they're called in to do. If they're going to stay longer than 14 days, they either need to go buy a temporary worker's permit to be there, or they need to get a Wyoming car, a Wyoming rental car that has Wyoming plates, or that dealer at least pays a 4% surcharge. And then the rest of the amendment is to go to the end, to the enactment, in page 21, line 14, delete July 1st of 09. YDOT requested that they didn't think they could get it together again quick enough with forms and educating all the dealers, rental dealers, so they'd ask that the enactment is actually January 1st, 2010. So with that, Mr. President, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you. Mr. President, I support that amendment. It does get into a problem of for those of us that live around the borders of the states or other, for example, a vehicle being rented in Salt Lake or Idaho Falls and wanting to drive into Wyoming and then drop it there. And if you don't do this amendment, just as the chairman pointed out, you could have a problem. So I support the amendment. I think it makes the bill better and would ask for you to vote aye.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a question on the bill that I still haven't had answered. In page 11, as I look under the definition of you drive a vehicle, I still think we have a situation where the normal rental agencies in Wyoming that don't rent vehicles, by adding trailers to it and the definition of commercial freight, we may have a situation where your local rental place has a trailer and you can rent it for your personal use. But if you rent it for commercial freight, it's excluded. But if you rent it for your business, it may not be excluded. Therefore, you're putting them into this category of a rental car dealerships, and I'm not sure you intend to do that. And I wondered if the sponsor or the chairman of the committee had a chance to look into that.
Thank you, Mr. President, for my second time. There is an ambiguity because I cannot find the definition of commercial freight, so I do concede that point, and I'm still looking at it. And, of course, the rest of the state's off today. So when I asked for some little bit of help here, My email is blank here. I'm not getting any. So I will make an inquiry today, but I will tell you that within the Wyoming Statutes 3118201G, which I've looked up and I still don't have a good answer, that rental agencies that rent rental trucks less than $26,000 to register a percentage, that they are forced to register a percentage of their rental fleet in Wyoming. This was left in Chapter 18 under the advisement of U-Haul International so that the U-Drive vehicles could qualify for international IRP program for commercial vehicle registration. So in within there, there is talks about weights, but it doesn't really define commercial freight. So I will hope to have an answer for you tomorrow.
I was waiting for it to be distributed.
I believe the amendment has been distributed now. Would the reading clerk please read it in?
Senate File 57, Second Reading Amendment Number 2, page 9, lines 13 through 24.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, this amendment, I ran this by the chairman of Transportation, because I was playing, as you can see, I was monkeying around with this bill pretty significantly. The what we have here is a couple things. As I read through the enforcement provisions and the bonding provisions, the criminal provisions associated with this, I was concerned because there were a number of repetitions, a number of places where it wasn't clear to me. It seemed to me sometimes we were addressing some parts in some paragraphs that should have been addressed in separate subsections. Anyway, long story short, as we go through this, what this amendment does is attempt to clean this up a little bit. Essentially, what we've done on the first one of these amendments. Hopefully, that's not me. What we've done on this, if you go to page 9, what we've done is essentially get rid of a part A. Subsection A, and we've modified subsection B, so that what happens is ultimately, if you look at that, they're almost repetitious, they're almost identical in what they do. Ultimately, one of them specifically refers back and duplicates the provisions on page 8, lines 18 through 21, as a condition of enforcing the crime. If you go to B, you'll see that ultimately we're talking about any person violating any provision of this entire chapter subject to the same provisions. There just didn't seem to be any reason to have both of those in there. And so my thought was we'd simplify that. We could simplify that by getting rid of Section A and modifying Section B so that it just still provides for the same criminal penalties, but also would make that for any person who knowingly or intentionally violates, who aids or abets any person in the violation of noncompliance. So if we do those things, which are already unlawful acts under the chapter, are all subject to the same fine. Ultimately, it just seemed to me a simplification and resulted in a uniform reading of what was going on in the enforcement section. The next page that I was changing was back on page 17. And in this section here, if you look at page 17, subsection F, or anyway, 17, beginning on about line 17, and also and compare that with subsection J, which starts on page 20 and goes through lines 23 through 24, there was one of those is a failure to file the 4% surcharge report. The other one is a failure to remit the surcharge report. Now, they're very similar, but ultimately what happened is in the failure to pay over, you were limited to 100% penalty. In the provision here on page 17, you were limited to 10% per month or a fee of $10, and ultimately that could go on forever. And ultimately you could have if you didn't, after 10 months it would be 100% penalty, after 20 months it would be 200% penalty. There would not be a limit, and that seemed to be a little bit harsh. And so ultimately I did the same thing they did in the put an upper limit of 100%, which is the same penalty that they had in the failure to pay over provision. So we've changed that to where it would be a maximum of 100% or $100, whichever one is greater. And that's basically 10 months or 10 times $10, which was the fee that was put there. And just puts an upper limit so you don't end up with a situation where somebody's got a 500% penalty because they failed to report. The next thing the amendment does is dealing with the bonding issues. Bonding issues start on page 18, line 17, and they had, as you talked about bonding, I tried to clean that up a little bit because some places I found that the bill was a little bit confusing about where they did that. So what I did is bonds are ultimately, I believe, are intended to be discretionary, which we read in the original language on line 17, which was the department may require bonds under this chapter as follows. We did that, and then what I did is I took and broke down the first subsection and broke it down into
30 seconds left.
Thank you. So I broke it down to where each of those are identified. I pulled another section. I tried to make sure that we were dealing with the bonds in an orderly fashion. And then the final thing I did is the last one, for whatever reason, on the bill on the top of page 21, was you had to go to court in order to institute the fine. I don't know why we would do that. Typically, fines are instituted by the department. They can be challenged administratively and appealed, but ultimately I don't know why we would go to court to assess a fine, interest, and penalties under these types of situations. So anyway, long and short of it, I didn't try to change the intent, but tried to clean it up and make it so it's a little bit more readable and more user-friendly.
Would you move that amendment?
Oh, please? Thank you. Quickly, before my 2 minutes is up, I move the amendment.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Larson.
Mr. President, just a point of clarification on page 2, line 26, 28. Are we adding or taking out attorney's fees?
Other questions or discussions on the bill? Senator Von Fladeren.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is and I commend the good senator from Casper. This is a very nice cleanup. I think he hasn't changed the intent. I do want clarification of the senator from Teton County on that particular item. But this is actually a friendly amendment, 2 pages worth. I really wondered what he did with the rest of his weekend.
Further discussion or question before the sponsor have his second term? Senator Perkins.
Well, what I think I did there, in answer to the good senator from Teton County, what I think I did there is I left attorney's fees in. So after attorney's fees, because attorney's fees was placed in by the previous amendment, so that language is still in there. So after attorney's fees, I dropped off the language in a suit instituted by and in the name of the state of Wyoming. The reason I did that is most of these places you'll see the report and the fines and the interest are assessed, and ultimately you're assessed and either pay it. If you don't pay it, then you appeal it or take the fine. You take the fine and you take it to court and appeal what the result is. And this, because it's basically an administrative determination about that you've delinquent and this is the penalty. Ultimately, I don't know why we would make the department do this in this instance, but yet we didn't do it on the failure to report. If you go back to the failure to report section, which is fairly analogous, we don't have to do that in a suit. So I just tried to make them parallel. Then ultimately on third reading, if we want to make these to a suit, the department have to do a suit, I think that's our choice. But ultimately I tried to make them parallel in both the failure to file and the failure to pay over. So the attorney's fees are still in there.
The question being, shall this amendment number 2, Senate File 57, pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate File 57, having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 59, second reading of the bill as a Senate file.
Road closures.
Senate File 59, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The bill is on third reading and final passage. Senate File 3, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 3, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, Abandoned Mine Reclamation Liens, and Act Relating to Environmental Quality, be it enacted by the Legislature of the State of Wyoming.
Senate File 3, are you ready for the question? Senate File 3, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Kirk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt. Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 3, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the member elected to the Senate, Senate File 3 have passed the Senate. Senate File 25, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 25, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, District Court's Release of Information, an act relating to criminal procedure, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senate File, are you ready for the question? Senate File 25, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
No.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon. Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Vasey.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
Senate File 25, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 25 have passed the Senate. Senate File 44, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 44, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. Pipeline Inspection and Safety, an act relating to Public Service Commission, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Are you ready for the question? Senate File 44, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns. Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas. Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Vasey.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 44, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 44 have passed the Senate. Senate File 49, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 49, sponsored by Senator Massey, psychologist licensure, an act relating to the Wyoming State Board of Psychology, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Are you ready for the question? Senate File 49, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
No.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
No.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis. Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
No.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
No.
Vasey.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
No.
Cooper, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 21 ayes, 9 noes.
Senate File 49, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the member elected to the Senate, Senate File 49 have passed the Senate. Considerations of bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried. Senator Peterson, would you please take the chair?
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. First bill for our consideration is Senate File 4. The reading clerk will read in the Senate file.
Senate File 4, sponsored by the Travel Committee, State Parks and Cultural Resources, Fort Bridger, and Act relating to State Parks and Cultural Resources. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Sessions, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Hello? Oh. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 4. There are no amendments. There are no appropriations. Mr. Chairman, for those familiar with the Fort Bridger State Park, they are negotiating with Uinta County to have the county actually give them 0.11 acres. It's basically the entrance where there's an larger-than-life statue of Jim Bridger and the sign. However, the State Parks and Cultural Resources has to get the legislature's approval to accept the property, and that's all this really does.
Further discussion? Question being called for on Senate File 4. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 4, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
No.
Senate File 4 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 61. The reading clerk will read in the Senate file.
Senate File 61, Sex Offender Registration, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to registration of sex offenders. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCaria, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise a report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 61. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 61, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 2.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and for a discussion of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, I refer to the good senator from Natrona County.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, what you have before you is a cleanup. If you remember, a number of 2 years ago in the general session, we increased substantially the sex offender registration requirements, updating our law and incorporating large portions of the Adam Walsh Act. Ultimately, the bill you have before you does three things. One, it has a substantial amount of confirming language. There has been some confusion in the application of the sex offender registration requirements since we passed them 2 years ago, which periods are 3 days and some periods are 10 days. This bill will go through and change all periods for reporting and forwarding from the sheriff to the department and back and forth, and also reporting requirements for all sex offenders who are required to register. But all those limitations are now 3 days across the board, so it would reduce that. The second thing it does is it clarifies significant registration issues that have arisen about with respect to where a sex offender resides. The term reside has expanded from a particular habituation or house or apartment to also definitions that will exclude where you attend school, where you're employed, if they're different than the county where you actually live, and also some ways for to cover sex offenders who may be transient and not have a specific or permanent residence, and also to clarify that the registration will always be done at the sheriff's office. In the old bill, there was a few times when it would be in the sheriff's office, and sometimes when it would be with the department. Now all reporting will be to the sheriff's office. The third thing this bill does is it creates contact with the state through prosecutors when they petition for relief from the registration requirement. If you remember, in several levels, if you were a 15-year, required to register for 15 years, after 10 years you can apply, and if you've done everything you're supposed to do and in compliance with the Act, you have the ability to petition the court and be relieved from after 10 years. What the amendment does is provide that in the event that someone petitions to have their sex offender registration requirements reduced and terminated in accordance with as they're allowed to do in the original Act, this would require, and this goes to the amendment, that the petition must be provided on the prosecuting attorney in the county where the petition is served. And what ultimately what that is gives the state and the prosecutor an opportunity to oppose that and to make sure if the state has protect the state's interest in determining whether or not that sex offender should be relieved from the registration requirement. With that explanation, we'll stand for any questions.
Any questions? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question with regard to the provisions. I'm looking on page 2, lines 23 and 24, and maybe I just don't understand how this works, but it appears to me with that modification, if somebody who's been has to register under this, either And they're obviously they're out of prison. They're back in society now. They go somewhere temporarily. They go up to Jackson for a day. They get a job as a salesman and sometimes wind up in motels and frankly don't know until they get there where they're going to find a room, that they have to go register at the sheriff's office. Are we putting some impossible complications on this? I'd like a little more explanation on that.
Senator Perkins.
Sure, and indeed it does. If you look at, and this is we're talking about in clarifying and expanding the definition of where it resides. If you look at the bottom of page 2, going to the top of page 3, we're list, you know, what you're particularly trying to find out is those individuals who are either transient or in or the process of having no home. You're in a situation, what you're trying to do is simply balance the requirement, and the purpose of sex offender registration is to know where sex offenders are, and so that if there's an issue that arises where they may be suspected, that we can find them. And ultimately what we've done is obviously there's a loophole. If you don't have a specific or permanent residence, what do you do if you live in a homeless shelter, or if you're camping out under your home for the summer is the underpass down by the railroad or something like that? Ultimately what we're trying to do is create a situation to where someone can't simply avoid the requirement to register by claiming that they don't have a permanent or address or residence as it was previously defined in the statute. Is it impossible? No, I don't believe it's impossible, but it ultimately we have to decide, are we going to let, where do we find that balance? Do we find that balance in saying, well, as long as you're a permanent resident, we have to keep track of you, but if you're transient, we don't have to keep track of you, or you don't have to report. And so ultimately, it's a balancing act, but there is a substantial population of sex offenders who are in transient, and otherwise, I don't know how else or how they would be required to register if we don't make them register when they don't have a permanent residence.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, frankly, I think it's probably a good idea to catch those people and make them register as best we can. What I'm a little more concerned about is hopefully with our imprisonment, with any treatment efforts that we've got, it's one of the things our mental health centers do, I think, and some of our other mental health professionals, we get somebody who's essentially been reformed and redeemed and is still required to register. You put this requirement in, and every time they may have a stable home, they do have a stable home, but every time they take a trip, they get into an impossible situation where they violate the law and become a criminal all over again. And maybe I'm missing something in the bill, but it looks to me like in the process of dealing with the one outfit that's trying to, one set of people trying to evade registration, you're making it impossible for the ones that are trying to comply and reform themselves and be decent citizens. And I'm a little concerned about that.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In dealing with this topic, the scenario is brought up by the good senator from Natrona County. One thing you have to take into consideration is that individual who may have been treated or whatever and is going to take that vacation does have a residence and will be registered in that area. But what we heard in the testimony in committee was that you're having individuals game the system by saying, I don't have a residence. I'm temporarily here. I'm temporarily there. And therefore they don't have to register at all. Certainly, if a person has a residence and they take a trip, I don't believe that that's a requirement for them to necessarily have to register. The other testimony we had was also that we're having individuals who don't reside in the state of Wyoming but come over the border and temporarily work or whatever, or frequent particular areas, and we have no way of knowing whether or not they're within our borders and are registering, and this is trying to catch that up also. So they have the three-day requirement that you must register within 3 days. And believe me, these guys or gals, they pretty much know the situation. They know what's required of them, and we're just trying to avoid a situation that has cropped up since the passage of our sex offender registry laws under Adam Walsh.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, yes, a question on, and I'm on page 4, lines, the changes in lines 16 to 18. Mr. Chairman, this is where the procedure for registration. And when it talks about if an offender refuses to register and they're with an agency, then the agency notifies law enforcement. My question is, does that mean that they hold them, the person that refuses, or does the agency, as I read this, goes ahead and turns them loose? As I also understand the way this bill goes, that they, when they talk about law enforcement, it's always the sheriff's office. And I'm just making up. What if the guy's being held by a municipal law enforcement, by the police force in some town? Do they hold them then for the sheriff to come pick them up and make sure they get registered, or do they let them, you know, there's all sorts of ways to notify. Give a phone call and then turn the guy loose. That maybe defeats what we're trying to get done. Can you clarify that for me?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Yes, we, Mr. Chairman, in doing that, if you look at specifically that paragraph there on page 4 from lines 8 down line 18, what you have is this is specifically related to somebody who's in the custody of the department, which would be the Department of Corrections, local jail, or a public or private agency, which would be a private jail, so to speak, to a court order as a result of an offense subjecting them to registration. So they're in jail for having committed an offense which required them to register as a sex offender. And so in there, now they've done their time and they're ready to be released. You have no legal basis which you can hold them anymore. And so there's an obligation, the paragraph of the existing law forces them or imposes upon them an obligation to register. However, they do have 3 days in which they can register. Now, you don't have a legally way to hold them in jail or prison any longer, and they won't have violated the law requiring them to register until 3 days have passed. So what this does is this would require the county sheriff or the Department of Corrections, whomever has custody, prior to releasing them, to notify the local law enforcement, the community where they'll be released, of the sex offender information so that they have that, so that they can at least be aware that this man or woman is going to be released and that they're out there and that they can be watched for. And ultimately, if they don't register within 3 days, then they can be somebody go look for them and find out and they can be rearrested for not having registered. But ultimately, that's what you do in a situation where they're going to get out. You can't hold them. The least we can do is make sure that the local area knows that he does the registration for them.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Scott.
Discussion on the amendment. Oh, no, sir.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment. Amendment number 1, Senate File 61. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. That amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm still confused on the bill. And I understand, and it makes sense to me, the effort to mail to people that are saying because they don't have a residence, they don't have to register. My question, though, is there something in the language either that's not printed here or in the bill that I haven't found that says if you are registered, sex offender is registered, they go to another community and stay overnight in a motel, so they're on business or something, and come back, do they then have to register due to that one night or two night stay or whatever it is?
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, I the only answer I can give to the good my fellow senator from Natrona County is ultimately what we've done. If you look at line 11 through line 14 on page 2, we've tried to define the words reside. We've taken out a permanent or temporary residence. We've just defined it as a physical address for each residence of an offender. I don't believe that a residence would be a one-night or two-night stay in a hotel. But a temporary residence is more in the lines of you're a student at the University of Wyoming. You may be a resident of Nebraska, and you may be a registered sex offender in Nebraska. When you come and you live in the dorm or you live in an apartment in Laramie, that's a temporary residence for the semester. This is intended to cover that, to where not only because you're a resident, but also because you're going to school here, that you would be. It imposes upon that person the requirement to register, not only in Nebraska, but also if it's at the University of Wyoming, in Albany County with the sheriff in Albany County, because that's going to be a temporary residence. I think when you look at that, what we try to do is a residence. It's not a residence in. And if you're going to go to Gillette for a month, you know, you're probably going to have to register in Gillette for that month period. But ultimately, that's the idea, is that you've done this. It's already on the Internet. You need to go by the local sheriff, notify them that you're there, be photographed, and register there. One of the other things I might mention, that we've changed all the other things. Notification now must always be done in person. No more by phone, no more by mail. You must appear at the county sheriff's office in person to register.
President Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to figure this out. If we're really gaining a lot, the people that have to register and are residing somewhere are trying to be responsible, and they will go ahead and do this. The ones that are not responsible and they have a resident, they can go anywhere for two or three days or longer, and nobody will know it, and then go back home. So am I missing something on here, or really the people we're trying to keep track of actually have a loophole? They're breaking the law, but they probably don't worry about that. Is this right, or am I misinterpreting it?
Senator Ross.
Well, I guess it would be in the eye of the beholder as to whether or not it's a loophole or not. Certainly they would have had to have registered where they reside, and if they go somewhere for a day or two, they would not be in violation of the law. If they residency is always a difficult situation in terms of getting our hands around it, whether it's in this context or in a divorce case or whatever else, because it also involves some intent or to make that their residence. But I guess the only other solution to it is ankle bracelets. I mean, an end game. I mean, you could have everybody that's a sex offender wear ankle bracelets. We've debated that one before, and the cost is pretty expensive and so forth. But I think what we've done is to try to balance the situation as best as we possibly can. Right now, as the law stands, they got 10 days, and there's nothing about temporary residency in it. This is an attempt brought to us in support by the Sheriffs and Chiefs Association, DCI. Everybody's on board with regard to this, the Attorney General's office, in terms of making sure that we do a better job of knowing where sex offenders are. Is it a perfect system? Probably not. I think in any situation you can have somebody who attempts to avoid or to game the system, and they may or may not get away with it, but this bill certainly tightens that up. It certainly avoids the confusion. There was confusion as to whether or not it had to be registered with the sheriff or DCI or who was doing that. This really cleans that all up. It's the duty of the sheriff's department, and they're the people on the ground closest to their locale and their citizenry that we're trying to make sure they know that these individuals are out there. So I don't know that I can answer it any better than that.
Senator Perkins.
One other thing, Mr. Chairman, one other thing that's in this bill that kind of helps to create a balance is keep in mind that whenever there's notice, that then the Sheriff's Department has to go out and notify everybody within 750 feet of where that temporary residence is, and also schools and daycares and other things that are in the area. So if you're there for 2 days and you walk into the sheriff and you say, I'm in town for 2 days on vacation, the sheriff's probably going to tell you that thanks for coming in, but we're not going to do that because I'm not going to notify everybody. It's going to take me longer to notify them than the time you're going to be here. But what it does do two things. One, it tries to balance that with respect, because every time you register, there's a notification requirement. But the other thing it does is also, as you look at the time, and in that balancing, it also refers to any physical address where the offender habitually goes. So if you go to Gillette all the time, or to some other community in the state on a habitual basis, you go register there, and that'll resolve that problem for you not worrying. If you're there one time habitually, I don't believe constitutes one time. I don't know, twice constitutes habitually. Three and four and five times in a period of time is will be a matter of interpretation, and habitually is not a really well defined term. It's something that'll have to be defined over time. But we've got to start somewhere with respect to plugging holes and keeping people from slipping through the cracks as they game the system.
Further discussion. Senator Geis.
Why couldn't you do like the parolees? Because I've had several parolees work for me over the years. And if we're going to Sheridan County, they call that parole officer and let him know that they're going to be in Sheridan County before they can go with me. So why couldn't you do the same if somebody was going somewhere and visit? Call the sheriff and notify him that you're going to be in Campbell County or Teton County or wherever you're going to be.
Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, that would still be true so long as you're either on probation or parole. They would have that added responsibility to comply with the conditions of their parole or their probation, and would certainly have to notify their parole officer if, in fact, they're going to be going to Sheridan to do a road job or something of that nature. But for those people that have served their term, are not out on parole, have nothing hanging over their head, they still have a duty to register. And it doesn't fall on the Department of Probation or Parole at that point in time. It really is a continuing obligation to register and to do that then with the sheriff's. Failure to do so is now another crime. So it depends on the status of the offender and whether or not they're still under probation or parole.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of Senate File 61, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Senate File 61 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise for the purpose of lunch and set again at 2 p.m. today.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Message from the House.
January the 19th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 100. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 5, Interstate Compact per Supervision of Parolees Repeal. Ayes 60, noes 0. January the 19th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 101, third reading, passed, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 55, Judicial Vacancies. Ayes 60, noes 0. January the 19th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 102, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 67, Tobacco Excise Tax, ayes 37, noes 23. January the 19th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 103, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 101, Excise Tax Manufacturing Exemption. Ayes 45, noes 15. Patricia Benson, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
January the 19th, 2009. Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 70, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 16th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 75, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. January the 16th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 85, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. January the 16th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 45, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. January the 16th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 52, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Coe, DeCarrier, Jennings, Massey, Von Fladern, Senator Coe, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Chairman, I would then renew my motion that we beg leave to rise and sit again at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Okay. Announcements. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 75, it was just read and reported out, contains an appropriation, and I would ask that it be re-referred to committee number 2.
Senate File 75 will be re-referred to committee number 2, appropriations without objections. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, has a couple of meetings coming up, two of which involve the new corporations law, which is Senate File 72. We're going to meet upon final adjournment today up in S-19, probably for a couple hours to have a primer about the new corporations law. And anybody's welcome to attend. We don't plan to take any action at that time on the law. Tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., we're going to hear Senate File 30, Bar and Grill Liquor Licenses, and Senate File 72, that's the Corporations Act. We'll pick it up to start working it in committee. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Senator Von Fladen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs will meet 10 minutes after adjournment. S-13, take up Senate File 74, Youthful Driver Restricted Licenses, Senate File 38, Real ID Compliance, and Senate File 60, National Guard Youth Challenge Program.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, committee number 3, Revenue, will meet 30 minutes after noon recess tomorrow, Tuesday, January 20th, to take up Senate File 53, Property Tax Deferral Program, Senate File 82, Weed and Pest Districts Bidding, Senate File 105, Weed and Pest Control Districts Unfair Competition, and Senate File 83, Community College Property Tax Exemption.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 12:35 up in S-18, right up here, to take up Senate File 88, Required Use of Ignition Interlock Devices, Senate File 90, Unemployment Insurance, Spouses of Deployed Military, and Senate File 92, Long-Term Care Access.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Joint Appropriations Committee will meet this afternoon at 2 o'clock and also Thursday at 2 o'clock for callbacks. So members of the JAC that have bills on general file will need to confer with the majority floor leader to make sure that they can coordinate their activities. Thank you.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, apparently last but not least, your committee number 6, Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow on noon I'm sorry, 20 minutes after noon recess, to discuss Senate File 15, Cultural Tourism and Heritage Areas, Senate File 13, Shed Antler Collection, Senate File 48, Game and Fish Landowner Coupon Redemption Period, and if time permits, Senate File 20, Works of Art in Public Buildings.
The motion is that the Senate be in recess until 2 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried.